It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
All right, welcome back to Money for Lunch. It's good to have you guys here. It really is. We have been challenged a little bit this morning. We've had some technical difficulties. See if we can iron them out. And meanwhile, we're going to be reviewing. I think today we're on number 11. Anyway, you know, last couple of weeks we've been talking about 13 things mentally strong people don't do. And this is a book by Amy Morin. It was became an overnight sensation. And it all started, by the way, from an article she wrote. And that article, I think, got something like 5 or 6 or 10 million views and shares and just went viral. And from there, she created this book, 13 Things Mentally Strong People Don't Do. So we've covered quite a bit. Yesterday was number 11. They don't fear alone time. And that, to me, seems so appropriate, considering that a lot of us are so connected to our phones and we're constantly liking and sharing and tweeting. Some alone time is a good. Number 12 today, they don't feel the world owes them anything. They don't feel the world owes them anything. It's easy to get angry at the world for your failures or lack of success, but the truth is, no one is entitled. It must be earned. I know that's a shock for some people. It is crazy to think that way, but isn't it true? I mean, nothing aggravates us more than somebody who thinks that they're entitled. Life isn't meant to be fair, says Amy. If some people experience more happiness or more success than others, that's life. But it doesn't mean you're owed anything if you were dealt a bad hand. Now, here's the deal with being dealt a bad hand. It's very subjective. I've had the pleasure of interviewing people who were born with no arms and no legs, who have gone on to be public speakers, best-selling authors. They're happy. And you can tell, you can feel their happiness when you're with these people. On the other hand, we also know people who have been born with a silver spoon in their mouth, so to speak, right? Some even a golden spoon in their mouth. I mean, they've been given every opportunity. Their parents have all the connections. They have tons of money, best schools that money could buy, yet they can't manage their way out of a paper bag. The key is to focus on your efforts, accept criticism, acknowledge your flaws, and don't keep score. Comparing yourself to others will only set you up for disappointment if you don't receive what you think you're owed. I just think that is so powerful. I think a lot of us do us so much harm, do ourselves so much harm because we compare ourselves to others. I was reading a story the other day where this gentleman went, he experienced some setbacks there in kindergarten. He was a couple of weeks late to his kindergarten class because he had been sick. And so the day he shows up to kindergarten, they're doing painting, and they're painting a tree. And he looked at his painting and he thought he did a pretty good job. And then he started comparing himself to what the other kids were doing, and his tree looked like crap, he thought. Unbeknownst to him, they had been practicing and studying painting a tree for the last 2 weeks. And so he was there kind of at the tail end. And here he was thinking he was a failure because his tree looked so bad. Well, the next day, he had the option of doing some more painting or going out to the monkey bars. He chose going out to the monkey bars. But I just thought that was a great illustration how we assume we're not good enough and we compare ourselves to other people. We don't know their backstory. We don't know that they've been practicing for 2 weeks, 2 years, 2 months, and therefore they're way ahead of us. Right? Maybe, just maybe, not only do they have some God-given talent, but they also work their butts off. All right, we're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Jeffrey Haislett, primetime TV radio host, best-selling author, keynote speaker, and global business celebrity. We'll be back right after this.
Did you bring the camera phone?
I did.
Do you want to go first?
I've been waiting for this all day.
Okay, this is Bro and Stacy.
Introducing Chase Quick Deposit. Just photograph the front and back of your check using the Chase mobile app on your iPhone and hit send.
It went through?
So cool.
This is so cool. You
want
to try it?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, who's next?
Make a deposit from anywhere, anytime with your iPhone.
To Mr. and Mrs. Walker, why would they send my parents a check?
Chase what matters.
Well, I'm not sure what it is. I guess I'll be okay.
I'm calling the studio, Matthew.
You're not shooting today.
Just get some rest.
He bought it.
Hi, can I get my CRV brought up, please?
Roderick. Roderick.
Life is packed with things you have to do.
But sometimes you gotta live a little.
Matthew, you poor thing. You sound awful.
How could I resist?
Look, I don't know what to tell you. He's sick. Actors get sick sometimes.
Thanks.
Have a good night.
Life moves pretty fast. If you don't stop and look around once in a while, you could miss it.
Get going in the all-new CR-V from Honda.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Cooler, Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
All right, we are back. My next guest, Jeffrey Haislett. Jeffrey Haislett is, if I'm not mistaken, and Jeffrey will correct me here in a second, Jeffrey Haislett is a New York Times bestselling author multiple times. He's written multiple bestselling books. He's a keynote speaker. He's also host of primetime, host of a radio show and a primetime TV show, Jeffrey Haislett. Welcome back to Money for Lunch.
Hey, it's good to be here. Thanks so much.
You bet. Now, okay, so beginning, I've been talking about mindset. The last couple of weeks, I've been talking about mindset and how important that is for business. And so I wanted to do this deep dive with you about the business mindset and kind of thinking about, you know, massive rejection or dealing with big obstacles. How do you do it? How do you deal with that?
Well, just run over them, go around them, through them, you know, over them or solve them, whatever you have to do to get it done, because in the end you have to win. And if you're not winning, you're losing. And that's the bottom line. And I don't mean to say that in a hard way. That's just that's the nature of business today. And that's what you have to look at. And I would tell you, I'm so glad you talked about mood, because I actually talked about that in my first book. I've got The Mirror Test, Running the Gauntlet, and then I have my newest book called Think Big, Act Bigger, The Rewards of Being Relentless, because it's only the relentless who win in the end. It's never the lucky, it's the relentless. And, you know, give me a break. I mean, there's a couple of lucky people, but really, truly, to sustain a business, you've got to be relentless. But mood is a big, big thing, and you can have the greatest mood and overcome a lot of obstacles, or you can have a bad mood and have the greatest product, you know, and have a bad experience. I mean, think about restaurants you've been into where the food isn't that great, but the mood is super, you know, and you want to go back. And then, or you've been to one of the best restaurants in the world and they're snotty and they're mean and they're, you know, they don't like their job. You know, there's some airlines that are like, and you don't want to be around there, you know?
Absolutely. No, that's so true. I'm glad you said that. It's so important. Our mindset, how we feel, is so much more important than what we know. We've seen people who shouldn't have done what they did, but they felt as though they could, so they went for it. You know, we have people that come to this country and they speak no English, they have no money, they have no connections, and within a short amount of time, they're the top of their field.
Yeah, oh, without question. And it's always about, I call these conditions of satisfaction. So what is it you want to do? So, you know, if you ever make a pinky promise to your kids and try to back out of taking them, say, to Disney World, what do they do? You know, Dad, you promise, you know?
That's right.
And so, you know, so what are your promises to yourself? What's your promises to your business? And I call these promises mutual conditions of satisfaction. You know, I have three for myself where I want to build wealth because, you know, I pretty much do most of the stuff I do for free because I love doing what I do. I go to bed every night, can't wait to get done with sleep so I can get up and get going the next day. I'm so excited. But building wealth is how we keep track. I mean, that really, truly is. And then I want to learn new things. I like things that are interesting. And then I want to have fun. And those are my three basic conditions of satisfaction. And when I'm doing business or working with somebody, you know, I had somebody recently, you know, try to get me to hire, you know, want to hire me. And I said, no. And they said, why? I said, I really just don't, I don't have that connection. You know, I don't want to do that, you know. And the money's nice, but you're kind of an ass, you know. And I'm not working with you.
You know, and that's one of the things, by the way, that I think that somebody who believes in themselves is able to kind of do that, to shy away from a client they don't like to deal with or blow off a client they don't like to deal with, because sooner or later, it's not the money. It has to be the joy. We've seen people I look at Charlie Sheen as a great example. Here's a guy that's making millions of dollars per episode.
Yeah.
And he has this massive public blowout, and people say, oh, because he was on drugs. And I say, no.
Yeah.
I mean, this guy has been on drugs and alcohol most of his career, right? But he had a blowout. Why? Because the money wasn't doing it for him anymore. He apparently didn't like some of the people he worked with or worked for, I'm sorry. Some of his bosses were not jiving with him. He had gotten, you know, for whatever reason, he didn't like working there anymore. And he finally had this giant blowout. Did the drugs help him? Yeah, probably. But look what he's doing today. He's doing more or less the same type of work, almost the same type of sitcom that he was doing when he left 3 and a Half Men. But now he's working.
Yeah.
Now his producer, his boss, is his brother. And he's got his dad in there as well. It's a different atmosphere, so he's having more fun doing the same thing.
Yep, exactly right. And he's getting to his own conditions of satisfaction, so hopefully he's getting to a healthier him. You know, that's the key. You know, wish anyone bad, but, you know, he's got a lot of other circumstances around that life that's not getting him to where he needs to be. So.
No, absolutely, absolutely. You know, he publicly admitted that, I think he's got AIDS and he's had all these other issues and he's been sober for the last several years. But again, I think that's all because he's in a better place and all that other stuff. But let me ask you this, okay? I mentioned self-belief. As you are, and maybe this happened so organically that you don't have necessarily a pinpoint, but when did you start acquiring enough self-belief that where you thought, you know what, I might be good at this. I might be able to, you know, make a living from writing books and helping other people and consulting with companies. How do you start or build or go with your self-belief?
Well, I think part of it's the track record, right, in terms of you've done it before. I was with a group of celebrities here recently, and I was speaking to them in a big private meeting because they, you know, a lot of people come to me and say, Jeff, how did you build this brand around you? You know, you now people call you a global business celebrity. You got a TV show, you got radio show, you're doing these books, you're doing all this stuff. Well, how did you do it? And I said, well, I just decided I was going to do it. You know, I said, we're going to go out and build this thing. We're going to go do
right.
it because I said, I didn't have you. I didn't have these people. I had only me. But they said, well, Jeff, how do you deal with those little voices in your head saying you can't, you know? I said, what are you talking about? What voice? And they said, you know, those voices that, you know, that come up to you and say, you know, self-doubt. And I said, you know what? I stopped inviting those voices to dinner many years ago. And I think that's something people need to think about is, you know, we always, it's us. We get into stories
right.
about certain things we can or can't do. And I just move beyond that and say, I'm going to do it. I don't care. If, you know, and it, is it tough sometimes? Yeah, sure. I go read my value, you know, read reviews on my book or, you know, I get a speech or someone writes something in after a TV show and said, you know, my wife's a personal trainer. Maybe you'd like to hire her because you're overweight, you know, shut the hell up, you know. I just don't need that in my life. And I got enough
right.
issues that I create on my own. I don't need somebody else to add to it. So you just have to just say, look, this is who you are. This is what you're going to be, and this is what you want to do. Go do it. And, you know,
right.
quit, get out of the pity parties and get out of all the self-doubt stuff and just make it happen.
Now, let me ask you this. And you see this quite a bit in the political arena. I think that one of the reasons that Donald Trump resonated with so many people is because he's a perfect example of what you just said. He has gotten out of his way, so to speak. Sometimes he does open his mouth and insert his foot, but guess what? He doesn't care. He's not holding back. He's not he doesn't owe anybody anything. So he is right now, as far as we know, he is funding his own campaign, and he hopes that will never change. I mean, he says that's not going to change. So he's allowed to make whatever statements he wants because he's got no worry about somebody coming back and saying something or losing support, so to speak. And I think that this inner critic, I think, sometimes becomes louder when we as a person or a brand or whatever, an individual, try to make everybody happy. And when we try to make everybody happy, we become this politically correct, blasé, you know, individual where nobody knows what we stand for. Look, whether or not you like Donald Trump, you know where he stands on the issues. There is no
yep.
gray area. You know, he's black and white. And I think that's what people have found so refreshing. What's your take?
Well, I know Donald. I talked to him a couple of weeks ago, actually, about some other things. And I've been on The Celebrity Apprentice for years. He's been a friend of mine for numerous years, along with his family. I think he's a little batshit crazy, but that, you know, to some extent, but aren't we all? You know, he's kind of like that. He's kind of like that golf guy at the coffee clutch. Did he just say that out loud? You know,
yeah.
You know what I mean? He's that kind of guy. And I appreciate that. It doesn't mean I like all the things he says or all the things he does. And also, I can tell you, a guy like Donald Trump likes to think out loud. So he likes
yes.
to have conversations and get – so he'll throw something in the middle of the table that's a bomb. I mean, it's basically, oh, my God, he just said that. But he's doing that to get the reaction from everybody else to see where he's going to go with that. Many of the times, I don't think he always believes all the things he says because he's trying to formulate and he lets the – you know, he creates the tension – that you need to have in order to get to a better place. And I respect that. Quite frankly, I told most people who are watching the election and doing the stuff they're doing, you might not like him, you might not think, you know, but when have we been this active in politics,
right.
you know, this far out from election? And I owe that to him, and quite frankly, we owe it a little bit to Bernie Sanders. I think Bernie Sanders has been one of those people too. You know, whatever you think of Bernie Sanders, he's got the convictions of his positions, and I think that's what you're seeing that's different with him and different
yes.
with Donald Trump, in that they're very, very sure of who they are or of the process that they create to get to where they want to be, and they're constantly adapting. And, you know, let me add one thing, because you said a brand is nothing but a promise delivered. So what are the things that you want to deliver in your own personal brand? What do you, and that's your promises. That's the things that you're known for. Are you trustworthy? When we talk about trustworthy, are you reliable and competent? Are you sincere? You know, all of those things, what do you look like in terms of that the brand attributes of that? And I think those are the real important things that quite frankly, that Donald has a good sense of.
Yes. Yes. And we're using him as a, you know, both him and Bernie, because I think you're right. Bernie is doing such a good job with his brand as well, as an example of having to go with the direction that you want to go with, having self-belief, and not cowering to outside criticism as well as that inner critic that might be holding you back. Because ultimately, as you said in the beginning of the show, it's about you. It's on you. I mean, look, you can be surrounded by the biggest and brightest minds, but ultimately it's on your shoulders. You can make, you know, we've all heard people say, you know what, I wanted to go in a different direction. I was talking to go in this other direction. It's my mistake. I regretted it. You know, no matter which direction you go to, people are going to criticize you, you know, and I think that's good. I think that we have to get good at being criticized and being good at getting uncomfortable with ourselves, because that's ultimately what separates you, people who have written multiple best-selling books, who have a primetime TV show, who is has a primetime radio show, who is considered a global business celebrity, the people who separate, you know, the people who kind of decided to go with their gut no matter what, that separates the haves from the have-nots. The people who are trying to make everybody happy and who change, quote, their brand, or maybe change direction to, you know, for every little criticism, and they're afraid to write a book because they don't want to be judged. Those are the people who are miserable and small.
Right, exactly right. Yeah, and I think that's the key thing, is having a good self-realization of who you are and what you want to do and where you want to go. And it should be around what's driving you in life. And again, I get back to these conditions of satisfaction. So what are the most important things that you can put out? Is what do I want to do? Stephen Covey, it was an old friend of mine years ago, of course he's passed, you know, wrote one of the best books, Seven Habits of Highly Successful People. And in that book, he identified that, you know, you have to have balance. You have balance in your business life. So what do you want to do in your business life? You have balance in your personal life. What goals do you want to set for yourself personally? Your spiritual life, and then your family. And a balanced person has those four areas in terms of, and really successful, real strong around their family, real strong about their spiritual side, real strong around their business and their friends. And I think that's something you want to really be thinking about as you pull things together.
Yes, no, I totally agree. You know, I got to spend some time with Stephen and Sean Covey, his son, and you know, I think that from what I could see from the time that we hung out together, and this was over a course of a couple of years, you know, he really walked the talk, right? He really was into spiritualness. He was into family. He was into taking care of his body. He was taking care of his business. He was taking care of all the things. And I think that, you know, he lived that concept of taking care of the big rocks first. For those who know, you know, Stephen Covey, you know, you take care of the really important things, right? First Things First, which is one of his other books, I think. And so you took care of that, and then all that little stuff, all those little whatever would kind of get taken care of, you know, they would fall through the cracks because maybe they weren't as important. And I think, you know, having a set of priorities is another, I think, element of success where you're not getting hung up. And we've heard this, but it's so true. You don't get hung up on this little stuff, on the minutia. You just have this goal and you're charging forward. But as you said, hey, you're taking your friends with you or your family with you. You know, you're making sure that you have the spiritual connection, because we've all seen people who have traded their, quote, success for their family, for their health. And at the end of the day, you know, you can't take it with you.
Yeah, well, it's absolutely true. Absolutely true. I like the, you know, you just added another one. I think the fifth one would be body, you know, because I don't think we do enough of that. I like that idea.
Yeah, you know, you look at Steve Jobs, and I think Steve Jobs, and there's a little article talking about how, you know, he regretted not taking care of his family and not doing more for his family, and whether it's an accurate article or not, I think it makes you think of what's really important. Yeah, your family. Yes, your health. Because, you know, ultimately, like all of us, sooner or later, no matter how successful we are, we go the way of everything else. Right? We die. And yes, we still talk about Steve Jobs, but life goes on.
Yeah, exactly right. Exactly right. Yeah, well, I have a phrase that I use in the book, and I almost titled the book like this, but the publishers really were against me titling the book. But it was, no one's going to die. obviously we will in the end, but by and large, the stuff that we do in business, you know, is anyone going to die? You know, outside of operating heavy machinery or brain surgery or something like that. For the most part of what most of us do in business every day, you know, if we do something wrong, the worst that's going to happen is a paper cut, quite frankly, physically.
Right.
So my question is, you know, don't take it too serious, you know. No one's going to die. So take some risk, you know, cause some tension. And as we get back and we talk about the obstacles, things, the ways to think big and act bigger, title of the book is, you know, what do I got to do to get it done? And that's what you got to do.
No, I like that. And we're going to end on that note. Jeffrey Hazlett, thank you so much for stopping by. Always good to have you on the show.
All right. Well, thank you, my friend. I appreciate it. And don't forget, continue to think big, act bigger, and be relentless.
And be relentless. I love it. I love that. And I like what he said there about it, it really is about being relentless. How committed are you to achieving your goals? Because we're all going to have obstacles. We're going to all be, you know, we might be betrayed by a loved one or a trusted person. But if you're not relentless, then maybe you're not serious. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be back right after this.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Cooler, Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on Geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
Did you bring the camera phone?
I did.
Do you want to go first?
I've been waiting for this all day.
Okay, this is Fro and Stacy.
Introducing Chase Quick Deposit. Just photograph the front and back of your check using the Chase mobile app on your iPhone and hit send.
It went through?
So cool.
It's just so cool. You
want
to try it?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, who's next?
Make a deposit from anywhere, anytime with your iPhone.
To Mr. and Mrs. Walker, why would they send my parents a check?
Chase what matters.
All right, we are back. My next guest, Sean Matthew Whitfield is co-founder of Vision Force Marketing, along with his wife and business partner. He's worked a variety of industries and even as a results coaching strategist for one of the top global entrepreneurs, Mr. Tony Robbins. Sean has coached people all over the world and has been able to get his clients massive results by getting them crystal clear on what their objectives are for the next 12 months. Sean, like a professional trainer, challenges clients to raise their standards and hold themselves accountable so they achieve their goals. Sean, Matthew Whitfield, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Thanks a lot, Bert. I appreciate it, man.
You bet, man. So, all right, so let's get into this. When you are working with individuals, how important is clarity?
Well, it's everything because it's your direction and, you know, where you're going. I mean, without clarity, I mean, and we're all going to be unclear at times. I mean, it's part of the game, you know, we're living life.
Sure.
But, you know, when you start to write things out, because, I grew up in a blue-collar home. I didn't grow up with, you know, this kind of thought. It was just kind of like, you know, you go to school, you get a job, and that's what you do. And, you know, it's just the way that I was raised. And so, you know, when I came across personal growth and started learning from some of these guys, it just changed my life. You know, clarity is power. And it wasn't until I started, you know, I've always been one of those ADHD kids, you know, but it's like ADHD, HD. I was high definition. So, I always thought that that writing down stuff was for other people. But, you know, the thing is that the clarity is, it's in the power of that pen. You know, there's something magical that happens. I forgot who stated it before, but there's something magical that happens when you take that pen to that piece of paper and you really write out what you want. And it's not easy. You know, a lot of people are like, I'm just going to sit down and write. But, you know, there's a, you know, a certain state that you have to be in. There's a physiology you have to be in. And, you know, I sound like a little Tony Robbins, but, you know, this stuff is true. And, you know, that message is so important of clarity. And it sounds a lot easier than it is because so many people, you know, when I've the pattern that I see a lot is that people aren't clear, and that's what they want. But they don't realize they have all the power themselves. Everything that they want is right there. You know, it's that pen and that piece of paper. It's starting to get clear and writing out what you want, what you don't want, and what you have to become to attract it. You know, and I think those are three powerful things that people can do. You know, so.
Absolutely, absolutely. Look, we see, and I think statistically, you know, the stats say that 80% of the world's wealth is created by the 20%. And I think that the reason why that happened is because that 20% is so crystal clear on what they want. If you walk up to the average person working in a job or whatever, most of them can't articulate what it is they want. Do you agree or disagree?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, and you'll get a generic response like, "Well, I want to be happy." Well,
yeah.
What does that mean? You know, what does that mean? Let's get clear on that. And because, you know, in our language, you know, people don't watch what they say. They really don't. They're not looking at what's controlling their life. And, you know, and in the beginning, it's really hard to do that. But I think over time, as you start to get better at it, especially having a coach in there, because you don't realize what's going on inside a lot of times. You think you're on the right course, and you don't realize that, you know, like Tony says, it's a 2-millimeter shift to make a completely different change in your life, you know. It's not, you know, a vision force marketing, what we do is we build strategy plans for companies. So we've been able to take the personal coach and really bring it over to this, you know, my wife, who's Leah Hoppus, my business partner, you know, she worked, you know, 20 years in manufacturing with billion-dollar companies. And, you know, we saw the strategy plans, and she knew how to build those. And now taking this coaching aspect and bringing it in there, you know, there's no reason why 8 out of 10 entrepreneurs fail in the first 18 months. And, again, it comes down to the planning. You know, a lot of it comes. And that's a whopping number when you're looking at that, you know, that entrepreneurs that are starting out, you know. And 5% of those businesses, you know, are starting with a marketing strategy on paper, you know. So, again, it comes down to that clarity. And a lot of people want to be tactical. They're like, well, I just want to go out and sell, or I just want to go out and do. But if you don't have that plan, where are you going to be,
right?
You know?
Yeah, and I think that again, that's a great point. I hope everybody's listening to that. If you're currently stuck in your business right now, there's a good reason, or there's a good chance that it's lack of clarity. Maybe you have a lack of a plan, and let's talk about this, because I think, you know, you mentioned this, that so many people just kind of gloss over this, you know, they don't really write it down because they've heard it before. And there is something magical about the written word, especially when you write it. I think when we write out our goals, we're investing our emotions, right? There's something, you know, kinesthetic about that. There's something magical. And I think that because you are emotionally invested in writing these goals down, that it transfers itself quicker, faster, better to the subconscious mind, something like that. But there is something magical about having your goals written down, having a business plan or a marketing plan written down. Let me ask you this. What are the benefits that you see by having businesses write down a marketing plan or a business plan?
Well, I think some of the biggest advantages is that, you know, most companies, like I said, are tactical. So they're throwing money at things thinking it's going to work or it sounds good, and it does. I mean, it sounds like it's going to work, and then they get less of a result. So then they go, well, you know what, marketing doesn't really work. We've come across this, especially in small business. I mean, when you're looking at the statistics of what small businesses actually spend, it's actually crazy what they spend on marketing. When they do spend it, they're not going after their ideal client. So they end up throwing this money at, you know, some type of ad, or they're spending it on AdWords, but they're not clear on what that is, or they think they have a company doing it, and they're hemorrhaging money, and then pretty soon they run out, or those types of situations happen. But again, it comes to being reactive, and being, you know, and being in that place where they're just being reactive to everything that's going on around them, instead of having a clear plan over 12 months of what you're going to execute from A to Z, and understanding, sticking to that, and then measuring the conversion rate on that and seeing what's happening with those numbers. But if you have your ideal client down in their shoes, if you have that person where you're targeting and you know where to target, you're going to have a lot better chance of attracting that person to yourself. But when most people aren't doing that, though. They're going out there of what they think is going to work, and then it doesn't get them the result.
Yes, and again, I want to take a couple seconds and emphasize this. This is so extraordinarily simple, hard thing to do. Write down, find out, discover who your ideal client is. Once you do that, I think everything becomes easier. Let's talk about this, because I'm sure, Sean, you've either come across this or you've heard about this. I think one of the things that hold people back about, you know, niching down their ideal client or their industry or whatever is because they think that, well, if I go too narrow, I'm going to leave all this money behind. What's your thought on that?
Well, I think what happens is you end up saving so much more money because you're going after your ideal client. And, you know, if you look at Chet Holmes, which is a great resource, really narrowing in on your 100 best clients. I mean, there's some amazing stuff there, you know, and going after that, you're able to take all those dollars and concentrate it on your top prospects, on the ones that your dream prospects. So we're building out marketing plans. We really help companies understand that, you know, it's about getting this down, but let's really focus on who's going to change your business. Who do you want as a client? I don't know about you, but there's certain clients out there, man, that I absolutely don't want. And, you know, and they're scary.
Yes.
Frankly, you know, you get them
and
they're not going to do anything. They're not going to even implement what you do. So, and most people they'll blame when they don't get a result, they'll blame the person, whoever's closest, right? They're going to point the finger and say,
absolutely,
it didn't work because of you. Nobody really takes the accountability for that. And, so, you know, what are your thoughts on that, Bert?
Well, I love, first of all, what you said about the fact that people don't take in consideration bad clients. And just so, you know, from my clarity, what I consider a bad client is somebody I don't mesh with, I don't fit well with, right? They're jerks to deal with. And maybe, and again, it's just a chemistry thing. They might be good people, but for whatever reason, we're not clicking. Man, it feels forced. We all felt that feeling of, man, I just hate dealing with this person. Get rid of them. That is not your ideal client. Even if they pay you on time, that is not your ideal client. Now, conversely, you might have people that you love to work with, but they're not paying you or they're not paying you on time. Get rid of them as well. Ideal client is somebody that you love to work with, that can afford you, that doesn't mind paying what you're asking for. That is an ideal client. These are just the feelings of an ideal client, and then that's why it's so important for you to sit down and say, okay, my ideal client is between, you know, is a male or a female, or maybe they're both, and they, you know, tend to earn this kind of money. And like you said, get it down to the shoes. Boy, if you know your clients that well, your marketing is so laser focused. Think about it. You're only going to attract those people. You're going to write articles that are going to attract those people. You're going to repel everybody else. And all of a sudden, instead of having 100 clients and being miserable and making some money, you might have 20 clients. You're loving life and you're making good money.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, something I've always found in business, which always stands true, is that the cheapest client is usually the worst client. Right? I mean,
they
don't pay, then they want everything for free. So, and you know, it's funny because we've worked in over 27 industries. So across the board, this is stand true. And when you talk to people in business, they always say the same thing. And it's absolutely crazy how that statistic will just keep rising to the top. But that's why it's also so important. But a lot of times, too, you think it's easy, but that's why, you know, you bring in a third party like VisionForce, you bring in a company that's a marketing strategy company, because you're too close to it. It's like, you know, you've been working on, you know, a project, a writing project all day, and, you know, somebody comes by in 2 seconds, you know, you've been looking for all the typos, you misspelled the, you know, and in like 3 seconds they see it. And that's really what VisionForce does. It's a partner that has experience, but is an outside objective view. And I think you really need that. And that's what that's why coaching is exploding right now, is because if people can have a trusted advisor that they can bring their information to, and then they could see it, it's just, man, it's such small changes a lot of times that change the whole face of the company, a different thought, just something that wasn't in your sphere of influence. You bring that out, and now you have a completely different result than what you had in the beginning. And,
right.
You know.
It, And you know, you mentioned this at the beginning of the segment, that sometimes it's that difference of 2 millimeters that changes everything, has this massive impact. 2 millimeters doesn't sound like a lot, but if you were off by 2 millimeters on a map, you're going to have a different destination completely than you wanted to. 2 millimeters can be massive. Back to catching a few misspelled words that make you go from looking okay to making you look really like you know what you're doing, right? And that's a massive jump. You know, I like this idea. All right, so let me ask you this. What is the difference between coaching, what you guys do, versus consulting?
Yeah. And that's a great question, you know, because we get that often. So, you know, Leah, with her background of having consultants come in and pay $20,000, $40,000 for, you know, a marketing planner, they come in, they're in and out maybe in a week, 2 weeks. You got a plan, and here's what happens. They stick it right in the file drawer. Everybody feels good in the moment. It's this little fluffy thing that they do in corporate. They stuff it in a drawer, and it never gets implemented. But for a while, they feel good because at least they got something on paper. They feel like they're going to move forward. But here's the deal, they're not with you for any length of time. See, we're with our clients for an entire year. So what we do is we make sure that we're implementing the coaching side. So after the marketing plan is done, we're meeting with them 2 or 3 times a month based on the company and based on how much time they really need to spend with us. Sometimes they only need once a month if they're a go-getter company. They just want to make sure they're on track. And, you know, we've got, sometimes we're up to 18 months. But, you know, the marketing world's changing so fast. It's hard to build out a 5-year plan because of the fact that, I mean, you can have goals, and don't get me wrong, you can have that stuff, but building out, because things are changing so fast, you have to stay on top of it. So we've been doing really well with 12 months for our one client. We had 150% return on investment for them, and that's huge. I mean, when you start to, you know, when you start to look at what we charge and what a consultant charges, and for the length of time that we're with them, you could say we're in the middle of the game with them. I mean, the people that we work with, they feel like we're part of their company. And that's, I think, the biggest difference between a consultant and what we do, because there's that coaching aspect. We get into the nitty-gritty. I mean, sometimes, you know, people don't have an exit strategy, and that's always an interesting conversation in itself, because that exit strategy is a major part of a business. And so if you have two partners that aren't getting along, sometimes you become a mediator for a lot less cost than it would for – you know what I mean? A lawyer to go in there and mediate your company. So, you know, it's all those. The marketing plan encompasses so much more than what people think that it encompasses. And all that stuff comes to the surface. But, you know, I tell people all the time, listen, it's about stepping out in faith, and then you'll see where your company is really going, all these different things. Because a lot of times we have to do that. You have to step out into that faith journey to find out where that end result is. But I think that's the difference between a consultant and what we do. We're not just writing a plan, getting out of there. We're trying to serve that client at the very highest level to get them as much value as possible. And our asses are on the line, frankly, when you're with them for a year. You could fake it, but time will either promote you or expose you. You know? And,
Let me ask you this. So let's say somebody says, hey, you know what? I like this idea. I want to hire you, Sean, but I only want to use you for a month or two.
You know what? What we tell them then, I mean, we don't want to water down what we do. And if we water down what we do, you don't get a result. We don't get a result. It's a waste of your time, and it's a waste of resources. So, you know, if you're really not going to be in the long haul with you or with us, and we're not going to be with you, we really don't want to be part of that situation. I mean, people, you know, they'll hire us for $250, $500 an hour on certain projects, maybe a one-off project where it's more of a tactical thing. But more than not, we really try to express, listen, because what happens is they'll have a meeting about social media, for instance. We want to do social media, which everything, you know, for companies, you know, there's this age group right now that's kind of struggling with social media. They know they need to be on it. They don't know how. And, you know, small, medium-sized business, we had this happen. And we went in to talk to them about social media. They ended up buying a marketing plan. And that was because of the fact they didn't realize, see, they're focusing on the fingernail on the pinky hand of marketing.
Right.
And they didn't realize that it was, whoa, okay, there's this whole, we have to get this
strategy
all clear before we even go out and do that. Exactly. It always goes back to strategy. Otherwise, you're just being tactical, and the things you think are going to work aren't, and the things that you thought were not going to work end up being your most successful avenues. You know, and this all just sounds like regurgitation.
Sean?
Hello, Sean. Oh, I apologize. Looks like we lost Sean. All right. Well, it happens. It happens sometimes on a live show. Things go haywire. Good stuff there from Sean Matthew Whitfield, and the company's called Force Marketing. We'll have him back. Good stuff there. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and then we'll be back right after this.
Did you bring the camera phone?
I did.
Do you want to go first?
I've been waiting for this all day.
Okay, this is Fro and Stacy.
Introducing Chase Quick Deposit. Just photograph the front and back of your check using the Chase mobile app on your iPhone and hit send.
It went through?
So cool.
This is so cool. You want to try it?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, it was nice.
Make a deposit from anywhere, anytime with your iPhone.
To Mr. and Mrs. Walker, why would they send my parents a check?
Chase what matters.
All right, we are back. My next guest, Frank Gigante, professional natural bodybuilder, contributing writer for National Muscle Magazine, and co-owner of the Natural Pro Fitness Coaching. He's a full-time school teacher, raising his two daughters. Frank has had a passion for fitness and nutrition for 20 years and educates people to take control of their own health and fitness journeys, thus living better, happier, more fulfilled lives. Frank Gigante, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Thank you very much. Excited to be here.
Now, is that a school bell? Is that what that was?
That was a school bell. I'm sorry. It won't go off again.
That's all right. That's all right. Hey, it's a live show. We've had a lot, stranger noises happen and a lot of weird, stranger things happen as well. So let's talk about this. Let's talk about the weight loss myth because, you know, right now, one of the things that I cringe when I saw this thing. There's a show on called My Diet's Better Than Your Diet, and you have all these different people trying different diets with the aim to lose weight. So let's start with that. What are some of the weight loss myths that you can help us with?
Well, considering we're 3 weeks into January, the biggest myth right now is probably the whole idea of the New Year's resolution weight loss myth, where everybody gets all gung-ho towards the end of December after they've eaten all their holiday goodies and, I'm going to join the gym. I'm going to lose 20 pounds. This is the year, you know. Well, we're 3 weeks in. How many people do you hear still talking about their goals or their resolutions at the moment?
Right.
You know, the biggest myth, the fitness industry, for one, jumps on that. You know, every gym's got a deal. Every supplement company's got it. You know, every magical diet pill out there is running rampant right now, and people are buying it up. The failure rate around this time is pretty high for New Year's resolutions. So let's face it. I mean, it can't be that magical if you have a 90% failure rate of New Year's resolutions each year. So that's probably your biggest miss. At the moment, you know, I mean, this time of year, this is the big one, and people buy into it, and it's become more of a joke amongst people. And people talk, hey, what's your resolution? You know, you see them on social media post some things, and you know, my diet lasted 4 seconds, you know, until I saw a donut or whatever. Emotionally, it has become a joke, you know, with most people. You know, it's, I'm going to do this for, you know, this week until I go back to work, and then that's the end of it.
I think people don't
succeed at it, but it's a very few people, and it's because they take a very different approach to it than, oh, it's my New Year's resolution time.
Right, and I think that it's almost a given that when somebody says, hey, I'm going to lose weight or I'm going to do this, you know, you don't believe them, they don't believe you, and it's all okay. Nobody's going to hold you accountable, so it doesn't matter.
Right, exactly. And that's the issue. I mean, year after year, you know, everybody's bought into this resolution thing, and everybody's kind of accepted that it doesn't really happen, and it's not real action, and, you know, those things don't last. And so even, you know, those people that do start in and, you know, earnest fashion of, I am going to do this, they already have all that emotional baggage and that underlying tone of this isn't quite real.
Right.
And it's okay when I decide not to do it. And so they're already set up for failure almost. And, you know, we try and work with people more of, hey, let's not talk resolution because it's already associated with negativity and failure. Let's talk, you know, a realistic goal. You know, what is real and what you can do now, where you are with what you've got. You know, let's make that happen. And then we can start to switch the conversation a bit.
Sure. All right, so let's talk about this. Let's talk about what are some of the things that we can do, maybe some small things that we can do that will yield some big type of results.
Yes. Well, the first thing is get rid of the word diet. You know, it's a four-letter word for a reason. You know, so dieting can't be short-term, you know, and unless you're in a competition or you have some specific reason why you need to be on a restricted diet or things like that. This is mostly a lifestyle. You know, you have to be honest with yourself and take a look at what do you do every day, what are you willing to do, what aren't you willing to do, and come to terms with that and be okay. And then it's a matter of, like you said, little things. What can you work into your day? Maybe, you know, maybe you like peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. I, for one, do. You know, so instead of using white bread and, you know, whatever, generic peanut butter, I might buy a whole grain bread, and I might buy a peanut butter that the only ingredient on there is peanuts. You know, no processed oils and sugars and all the extra stuff in there. Now it's not so bad. And then if I take that in the context of what am I eating the rest of the day, you know, now it's just a little thing. I can still enjoy my peanut butter and jelly or my chocolate or whatever that may be for people. And it's somewhat healthy, and they're okay with that. You know, it's not, oh, I need to eat tilapia and Brussels sprouts 6 times a day because that's going to make me healthy. If you hate those things, why eat them? You know,
right.
So it's nothing drastic. You know, they have to be little changes. Maybe drink more water. Maybe start, you know, going for a walk a couple times a week. Not for hours, you know. Maybe it's a 20-minute walk because you have 20 minutes in your day. Maybe you've got 40 minutes and you decide, I'm going to start at 20 and build up to 40. But just small changes over time will yield those results.
Well, you know what, and I'm glad that you said that, because most people don't get out of shape, don't become overweight or even obese overnight, right? It's small changes. They went from being active to being inactive over, you know, over time. It's very common for somebody to come, you know, if you're, let's say, an athlete through college, and all of a sudden now you have a career, and let's say you get married, your fitness gradually went out the window slowly but surely, right? And
exactly.
Again, it's just all these drastic changes, all these subtle changes that give you big results. And so I like this idea of doing the same thing in reverse. So instead of throwing all your food out of your kitchen, maybe start with one item. This year for me, matter of fact, I'm avoiding flour tortillas. I love flour tortillas. And so that's one of the things I'm cutting out this year is just flour tortillas. And when I say I love flour tortillas, man, I'd rather have a flour tortilla than a piece of bread. I like it. You know, I use it for everything. You mentioned peanut butter and jelly. Well, I use it for that. I use it with my tuna. I use it with everything. But it's very processed. You know, it is very processed. And so there are probably some things that our listeners can do. You mentioned water intake. There's something that most of us don't do a lot of or enough of is water intake. Another one might be getting to bed earlier. That's kind of a weird, easy one. But, you know, most of us are getting six hours of sleep a day or less, and then we try to make it up by taking in a lot of caffeine.
Right. Right, yep, and things like that. I mean, that's something I do even with my own girls, my daughters. You know, we make pizza. We just made it pizza this weekend from scratch. Instead of reaching for the white flour, I've bought whole wheat flour. We made pizza dough. You know, they don't know the difference. It tastes just as good. They're happy.
Right.
You know, and like you with the tortillas, I've switched over to like a whole grain tortilla or something like that. And so when I make little wraps and things with tuna or chicken or things, I use one of those, and it fits.
Right.
You know, much better, and it's not as processed, and the ingredients are much better, and it works. You know, it's just a little thing. I don't have to give it up, like you said. You don't have to get rid of them. You don't need to, you know, flare off everything in your fridge. They're just little changes.
Right. And, you know, I think that the other way is the way we think about our life. I personally love to eat. I consider myself kind of a foodie. I love trying new things. I love trying new restaurants and food from different parts of the world. But if I don't maintain a certain level of activity, all that eating will show up in how I feel and how I look. And so some of us, we have to make that connection that how we move will eventually show up. And again, we all don't have to be bodybuilders. I forgot to, as I mentioned in the intro, you know, you're a professional natural bodybuilder. Not everybody has to be a bodybuilder. You don't have to spend, you know, 2 or 3 hours a day in the gym. But the reality is our health and our fitness has massive impacts on who we are. You know, it's so funny to me that one of the big drugs that came out a decade ago is Viagra. And that's great. Mm-hmm. There's nothing wrong with taking Viagra. But if you're taking Viagra, I think to me it's a symptom that there may be some other problems in your circulatory system that's not working, right? If you're not getting blood to that part of your body, you may want to find out why.
Exactly. But that's not even a health thing. That's a society thing where we're much better at treating or masking symptoms rather than getting to the root of the problem, I think.
Yes.
And that goes across the board, any area, you know. But everything you said makes sense. I mean, it kind of does start with nutrition. If you're eating better, and we're not saying changing your entire eating habits, but just eating better, healthier, you know, making some better choices, you start to feel better without doing anything, you know, because your body has better nutrients to work with. You're fueling yourself better. You start feeling better, which makes you want to move. You know, you have more energy. You become more active. And like you said, I mean, even I, as a professional bodybuilder, I don't spend 2 or 3 hours a day in the gym. I spend about 3 hours a week in the gym total. You know, so it does not have to be, oh, I need to, you know, go walk on a treadmill for 2 hours today. Or, you know, but once you start eating better and feeling better, naturally you'll start to have more energy and you'll want to do more things and be more active. And you might join the gym and maybe you go for a half hour a day, 3 or 4 times a week. I don't know. But again, it's not an all or nothing thing. And the myth of all of this is it's not I have to eat certain foods, I can't eat other foods, and I have to spend X amount of hours in the gym a day in order to be fit or be healthier. You know, that's just not true. It's a lifestyle. It's something you can do, you know, as simple as getting up in the morning and, you know, making coffee or making breakfast. It just becomes routine. It becomes very natural, and it's not a depriving yourself or fighting yourself or beating yourself up because you had an extra piece of cake. It just becomes part of your life, and it's not a big deal. It's not something you have to think about as much.
I love it. I love it. Frank, we're out of time. Good to have you on the show. I'd love to bring you back and talk more about fitness and some of these myths and maybe simple things that we can do. Frank Gigante, thank you so much for stopping by and helping us.
Hey, thank you very much, Bert. I'd love to come back anytime.
All right. Good stuff there. Again, I like the examples he gave. Look, you're not cutting out everything out of your life. In fact, he gave some examples of pizzas and wraps that you can do and just look for more natural, more organic items. Stay away from the processed foods. Get more water. Get more sleep. You know, it's amazing. We've all seen people who have traded their success for their health, and now they would do anything to get their health back. Don't be that. Don't be in that position. Remember, you were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch, and check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.